Picture tells a story. No picture also tells a story. And that's how we begin this morning. Fred Richin joins us, professor of photography and imaging at New York University and author of After Photography, joins us from his home in New York. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
So this discussion is about the power of the White House, the power of a photograph, and also the history of protocol in releasing controversial photos of one kind or another. In a sense, the White House is acting as a photo editor for the nation and the world. What's it like to be sitting on a very powerful, controversial photo and having to decide whether to release it or not?
Well, the White House has already done that. A couple of years ago, there were the images out of the abuse in Afghanistan and Iraq by American troops. And the Obama administration first said they would release it, and then they decided not to release those images for very similar reasons. So there's a precedent. It's not the first time. But I think what's really going on here is in the image war. They're trying to control an image war, you know, not just abroad in terms of giving ammunition to other people to feel badly about the United States, but I think also in the United States not to use these images as Obama said, as kind of trophies, as, you know, celebrating, parading around with these images. It's not just the photograph. It's really, it becomes something bigger than that. It becomes an image as part of a greater image war.
Do you think this is a feature of the Photoshop era where everybody can take a picture, everybody can take the Mona Lisa and put a mustache on it? It's a kind of a Dada world we live in right now, Fred?
Yes, I mean, almost the opposite, because the photograph doesn't have the credibility it used to have. It's not an automatic proof. So even releasing a photograph doesn't mean something happened anymore. It just is really, it's the post-production in photography now that counts for many people, the idea that you start with the image and then you change it. So there's an assumption, because people change their own images all the time, that that's what other people do as well. So it's really, again, the issue of authenticity. Do you believe who's releasing the image? If the photographer's standing there with the image, you tend to believe it more than if you just see the image at this point. It does not have an automatic credibility.
When you were the photo editor for the New York Times Sunday magazine from 1978 to 1982, were you ever in a position where you had a journalistic photo that was controversial and had to field a call from the White House urging you not to run it or to run it? How did the argument go if you had such an experience?
No, it was basically ourselves asking the question, is it worth it putting this kind of an image if there's a child covered in blood in Central America, and the question was, do we really need to show this for people to understand what's going on? You know, how do we have to raise the stakes in that sense? Do we have to make things more gory and gory and gory until people believe it? And our feeling was a bit of restraint is good. You don't have to inflict that on people. People do understand it. And I think in this case, imagining the photograph is actually even more powerful than seeing it.
We're speaking with Fred Richin, professor of photography and imaging at New York University and author of After Photography. Fred, I'm wondering, there's this implication that the image of Osama bin Laden, bloody, with a gun wound to his head, presumably, would act as a kind of nonverbal, incredibly inspirational or motivational tool in the hands of extremists. And yet we have photos of the compound itself with a great deal of blood splattered around. Reuters has released these other images of the other men shot there. Is there truth to the fact that that image of this leader, this ideological leader, could be more powerful in the pictures of death than his words in life?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's an idea that the photograph becomes almost a fetish. It's almost part of the body at this point. We make those kinds of associations. And the photograph of the compound gives a context, but it doesn't really give that sort of fetishistic quality that the photograph of the actual death would give. So, you know, I think there is an argument on that side at this point. But then again, we're going to see all kinds, and are seeing all kinds of fake images, which will provide some of the void. But in my opinion, the administration is making the right decision. We don't need this kind of image. We don't need to inflame things. And in an image society, we have to actually be more rational. We have to think about things and not just portray things in images all the time and then, you know, toss it around as part of this image conflict.
Well, there is a power to the images, that's for sure. And it's reflected in some of the responses that we've gotten. Let's listen to a selection of some of the responses on this issue of the photo, Fred Richin. First, here's one listener.
My name is Barbara DeArmas. I live in Miami, Florida. I would do the same as the president had decided. We just have to let the president make the decision that he thinks is right for the nation. That's why he's the president, and we should respect his decision.
And a not surprising sort of affirming what the president has done. Here's another view.
My name is Joe Guyon from Rock Hill, South Carolina. No matter what President Obama does, if he releases the photos, if he doesn't release the photos, he's damned if he does, he's damned if he doesn't. And I wish the press would just let it go.
A little exasperation with the media there. And listen to this one.
I'm Joe Alvarez from Tacoma, Washington. There is no reason not to publish the photos. If we don't publish them, the terrorists have won.
Fred Richin, if we don't publish the photos, the terrorists have won. Professor of Photography and Imaging at New York University. That's quite a range.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, we don't have to respond to other people. We decide ourselves what do we think of as being a civilized nation does. We don't have to gloat in the death of somebody else. We could leave it invisible. I think, you know, monotheistic religions with this idea of the invisibility of God, it's on purpose. There was a fear earlier on that if we put everything in image, there's a sense of idolatry. There's a sense of the image serving all kinds of other purposes, distortions. And I think that, you know, I think Obama's decision to keep it invisible is a good decision in this case. I think eventually it will be released, but perhaps at a calmer time when we could reflect upon what we did and you know, for history. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
So in this era, I think it's fascinating what you're saying. In this era, the photo itself is non-rational. It's not a rational confirmation of anything. It's a non-rational trophy because we don't need the photo to prove that Osama bin Laden is dead, right?
Well, look at the covers of a lot of the tabloids when Osama bin Laden was killed. They almost all picked the same image of Osama bin Laden sort of gazing into the distance, almost like a visionary. And I was very struck by that. And I was wondering, why did they pick that kind of, it was almost a complimentary image of this guy having a vision. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, what are they doing with that? And then I was starting to think, you know, who did it remind me of? And it reminded me of a religious icon.
There you go. It's a narrative that they are creating with the picture itself. And the White House is trying to avoid doing that. Fred Richin, professor of photography and imaging at New York University, author of After Photography. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.